Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Chuck Hammond broadcasting live from the global headquarters of the 401k Study Group. Today is February 23rd, 2017. I am pleased to have Mr. John Russin on the phone as my guest today. We are at the end of February, and today in the Mid-Atlantic, we're going to be at 74 degrees. John, you're in California. What's the temperature there? Do I win?
No, you do win this one. It's actually a little bit cool today. It's last time I checked, in the 50s, low 50s.
Sweet. I usually never get to win that contest with anybody that I do podcasts with in the winter. So welcome to the show. John is a partner at Pension Assurance LLP, and they're a single-scope accounting firm that specializes in pension plan audits. So, John, you've been doing this for a long time. Tell me a little bit about the firm, and more importantly, why, as an accountant, you got into the pension and benefit audit business.
Okay. Well, thank you, Chuck, for having me on the show. So I got into this, you know, I mean, I started my career, went to the Big Four, you know, it was Big Five at the time, accounting firm. Kind of did a little bit of everything. Spent my summers doing retirement plan audits. Really enjoyed that experience. And then after a few years, not only did I enjoy it, I mean, as, you know, as far as auditing goes, I guess, but I saw the opportunity out in the market. That, you know, it was a service area that was being underserviced. Big firms didn't want to touch it. It was not enough revenue per audit. And then the smaller firms were just so diversified, you know, your typical full service kind of do everything. So I kind of had a concept in 2005 that I, you know, went out and started my own practice. And initially it was, I was a specialized focused partner in retirement plan audits, but at a kind of a typical full service accounting firm. So I wasn't quite ready to fully commit until 2014 was the year when we decided to spin off and make Pension Assurance. And so with the concept with Pension Assurance, it was just kind of taking that specialist concept to the next level. That is, you know, before where I dedicated all my time to retirement plan audits, but my team still kind of did that shuffle where they were, you know, kind of moving from service line to service line depending on the season. And then in 2014, we decided, you know what, we can actually make this a standalone business. I think it positions us even stronger in the market. We'll be experts that much quicker and, you know, be able to dive that much deeper. So that was the idea with Pension Assurance, is to create a firm, that single service accounting firm, focuses on retirement plan audits year-round and firm-wide, which is pretty unique. I don't know that I've really seen another firm like ourselves out there. Our growth has kind of substantiated everything that we thought would happen, or actually exceeded what we thought would happen. And as of last year, we audited just over 210 plans. And we got there pretty quick, too. So we're one of the larger practices. Definitely out here in California, we're one of the largest practices. And we're already starting to rank nationally, you know, for a kind of a younger, smaller firm like ourselves. So that was the idea, is just do nothing but this. And yeah, it does leave us with a slow season right now, which is kind of odd for a CPA to be slow in February, but it's actually starting to pick up already. But, you know, if we decided that if we could do nothing but retirement plan audits, we could really become very technical at it, find a lot of efficiencies, which I know plan sponsors love when we can find efficiencies and lower those fees. And so that was the concept behind Pension Assurance.
Well, it brings up an interesting topic. You know, the folks that need these audits done from the plan sponsor standpoint, they almost view them as a commodity. They have to have them done. They're not always 100% sure why, but they have to have them done. They get expensive, and I think you're right. You know, the full service accounting firm that might handle the corporate accounting and all of the other accounting payroll needs of these corporations, they can live and die by the audit. They don't want the audit to be too expensive, because then that might put the other general accounting and corporate accounting business in jeopardy when somebody comes in and tries to undercut them. So I want you to answer a question for me right out of the gate. You're in California. Do you do business with plans and or advisors that are not in California?
Yes, we do. I think we're currently in 18 to 20 states right now. We can either travel or nowadays we can do it remote. I mean, we set up a shared folder. I mean, it's very, very easy to do business remotely these days. So we do, in fact, cover almost the whole United States.
And I think what's interesting is that, you know, I always joke around that anything that has tires or technology is usually trouble. You know, like your car, there's always mm-hmm. something going on with the car. But in this case, mm-hmm. the technology has enabled you to scale and, as you said, be laser-focused, find operational efficiencies, and become experts in a field that I think a lot of accountants would probably either like to stay away from or candidly don't have any business doing. Wasn't there a recent Department of Labor accountability study on the quality of these audits that were done?
Yeah, there was, and it came out in 2015, in May of 2015, the Department of Labor did a study. It's about an 80 to 90 page study on their website. We've got a one page write up on our website if anybody wants to go there. That's at pensionassurance.com, and it basically summarizes. They did a study. They sampled 400 retirement plan audit work papers. So they're specifically looking at the work papers, not the 401k plan itself. They wanted to look at what the auditors were doing. And the study, they weren't happy with it. It was about a 40% deficiency rate overall. And so they tried to dive in to see, well, what's causing these, you know, where are the similarities between these firms that are, you know, are deficient in their work. And so the biggest correlation they found was just the number of plans audited. And I think that's probably intuitive, but you know, I talked to enough people where, you know, maybe it's not that intuitive. And maybe, you know, I mean, I think plan sponsors just have so much to deal with that. Yeah, maybe they're not looking into, hey, does my CPA firm that does my corporate audit and tax work, do they have the expertise? Do they understand ERISA? Do they know 401k plans? You know, how many plans do they audit? So they're not quite diving in there. But clearly this study, and I mean, there was a couple thresholds that were just, you know, I mean, firms that audit 24 or less plans, which, I mean, that's a lot of firms out there that audit 24 or less plans. They had a 67% deficiency rate. So when the Department of Labor looked at those work papers, two-thirds of those work papers, they found deficient work. And in a lot of those cases, they won't accept the filing, so they can reject the Form 5500. So there are consequences. And then even under 100 plans, they still found a 41% deficiency rate. So the study showed that the audit quality was not great, and it was especially not great with firms that, you know, were kind of your typical full service, do a handful of these because we do the corporate and tax work. Why not do the 401k plan audit as well?
That's interesting, but I also want to make it clear, these firms aren't your enemies. Isn't there a possibility for one of these full service firms or maybe a smaller local accounting firm, isn't part of the overall plan for Pension Assurance to be able to act in sort of a consultative role with these firms, so it literally takes them off their plate? So these other firms aren't necessarily enemies, they're potential business associates and partners. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, that was part of our business models. We wanted to kind of be that companion and that partner to those CPA firms that didn't want to do that work. So yeah, I'm, you know, I understand why they do it. A lot of it is defensive, and you know, so it's yeah. I mean, they are that. They're one of our biggest referral sources. Actually, is other CPA firms that, you know, they've got the big corporate audit or tax audit, and yeah, that 401k plan comes up because they hit the audit requirement, and now they don't know what to do, and they don't want to refer it to, you know, they don't want to tell their client they can't do it. So we've actually partnered with several firms. You know, the big firms have always kind of been referring us, but now I think the smaller firms are, now that we're a standalone service, now they don't see us as a threat. We're not coming after their tax or corporate audit work or any other accounting work for that matter. So yeah, we make a nice partner to kind of protect their back door and take care of their client and, you know, do good by them.
I like the way that sounds. One of the main challenges that advisors have, and I get the privilege of talking to a lot of them on a regular basis, is, you know, at some point they want to move upstream. Now, from an advisor, that might be from startup plans to plans, you know, under $2 million, and maybe they're at that threshold and they want to go to 5, or they want to go to 10, they want to go to 50. One of those small speed bumps is the knowledge curve that typically smaller plans don't necessarily require an audit. So an audit's an audit, right? What's the difference?
So let me talk about – you bring up a great point is – and I think advisors can really bring a lot of value and position themselves stronger if they do fully understand the audit requirement, what triggers it, what to be aware of. And I think the more proactive they are, I think they're going to build stronger relationships. It's going to help their prospecting. It's going to help just retain clients and just bring more value to the whole process. So let me talk about the audit requirement so that any advisor that's listening to this will understand that, because that is one of the number one questions I get. What triggers an audit, especially for an advisor that's just moving, starting to move up market and getting into those larger plans? So 100 eligible employees or participants, is what determines if a plan is a large plan filer. Okay, that's when their Form 5500 changes and they have some additional schedules. Schedule H being one of them. Schedule H is what we audit, are the financials that reconcile to the Schedule H. So at 100 eligible participants, so that's anybody who's eligible to participate, regardless if they are or they aren't, and anybody who has left the plan but has left money behind in the plan, and so it's a terminated employee but left an account balance. That gets included as a participant count as well. So 100 is the threshold to drive an audit. Now, there's a few exceptions to that. If there's an existing plan, there's a thing called an 8120 rule. So the 8120 rule allows plan sponsors to file how they previously filed in the current year if they're between 80 and 100 participants. Forget about the 80. Nobody will do it if they drop under 100. They'll just go back to a small plan filer to avoid the audit and the fee and the larger Form 5500. So participants that are plan sponsors that are in business, have had a plan, for now a number of years, once they go over 100, they can still file as a small plan filer based off the 8120 rule. They can do that all the way up to 120. Once they go 121 or higher, then they are forced into the audit. Another exception, there's some other, there's some small plans that have to get audited, but that's a little too abstract for this, so I'm just going to kind of stick to the mainstream, 99% of what's out there. If you start up a new plan and they have 100 employees right off the bat, so let's say they have 105 employees, it's a brand new plan, that would need an audit right away because it can't rely on the 8120 rule. If you start up a plan mid-year, so let's say you start it July 1st, and then you carry out. So it's going to be 6 months short filing that first year, but it is over 100 employees. The six-month filing will need to be audited, but it can be deferred until the following year. So the rule is if a filing period is 7 months or less, you can defer it to the following year. Still needs to be audited, still needs to be submitted, but they allow a deferral. So a new plan doesn't have to deal with that right off the bat. It's supposed to allow some cost savings if an auditor can come in and do field work once for the 2 years of audits.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. I didn't know two of those things, so I'm glad that you were personally on this show, and I learned something today. So, John, before we get too far into the rest of the time I'm going to have you on here, people are listening to this. They're liking what you hear. You're trying to add value. You're trying to help advisors add value. What's the best way for folks to get a hold of you? Is it email? Is it Twitter? Is it the phone? How should people reach out to you if they want to?
Yeah, I'd say email or LinkedIn. I mean, you can find me on LinkedIn pretty easy, John Russin. Or email is a good option as well, jrussin@pensioninsurance.com. I'm sure there's contact information at 401k Study Group as well, so. It should be easy to track down.
Well, there is contact information, and you are actually on our provider directory, and we're happy to have you there. So let's continue with the thread of, for me, when I do content, I first and foremost will be selfish. I always want to learn something, and I've already done that. So in this case, it's gone well. Secondarily, I want advisors to be able to learn some things. And, depending on their level of experience, that happens the majority of the time. But my third goal is that an advisor could use the content on here to help educate an existing or a prospective plan sponsor. So we're talking about some of the things the advisors should know. Those are probably a little bit more granular than what a plan sponsor should know, but what should a plan sponsor be looking for when they are looking to select or actually review the current firm that's doing the audit now?
It's a great question, and it's something I've kind of been promoting actually ever since the study came out. You know, clearly there's a problem in my industry, in the 401k audit industry. And, you know, I mean, it's times have changed. We know that. I mean, everything needs to be documented, fiduciary, you know, liabilities out there, exposure. And so as fiduciaries, plan sponsors need to, you know, document their decisions. So as far as going into it, and I think we'll do another show down the road where we talk about, now that they're into an audit, what are the things to look out for and do that. But I like the approach now. Let's just talk about what leads up to the audit, what causes the audit, and now that we're there, how do we select an auditor? Is to select an auditor. So we are putting together an RFP. I've kind of sent out a rough draft to people who've asked for it, but we'll polish up something. It'll be available soon. We'll make it available to you, Chuck, and to whoever you want to make it available to. But it'd just be a nice, efficient RFP, and we've kind of consolidated a lot of the RFPs we've seen over the years and taken out the things that don't matter. But I think clearly, as I referenced from the Department of Labor study, the number of audits performed is a clear indication of the quality of that audit, probably one of the biggest indications. So I think that's one of the first questions you ask an auditor is, you know, how many plans does your firm audit? How many plans does that partner oversee? Because you could still have a firm that has 50 offices and they may audit 100 or 200 plans, but, you know, each team's maybe seeing 5 to 10 audits, and so the quality's not going to be there. So very important to find out the people working on the team working on your audit. What's their experience? What's their commitment to retirement plan audits? You know, and a lot of that is derived by how many audits they perform. You know, how much of their year does this consume is really what we're trying to get at. So that's, you know, one of the main things. And I mean, I think it's just the overall commitment to what's their training look like. You know, are they attending the AICPA Employee Benefit Plan Audit Conference that's held every May? There's another one held in December. That's probably the next level of, you know, a firm that's even more committed. And there's other trainings. You know, part of RFP, we kind of list out a long list of all our conferences that we go to because we feel like, you know, that's an indication of our commitment and, you know, that we're willing to go to all these various trainings specific to retirement plan audits. So you want to look at that. I mean, the fee is definitely a consideration. I mean, this is a plan expense. Some plans pay the expense out of the plan's assets. Essentially, the participants pay for it. So in that sense, you know, you got to make sure that the fee is competitive and there's the appropriate value for that fee. You know, we're seeing a consolidation in our industry, so the days of the $3,000 plan audits are kind of going away. You know, you'd occasionally find somebody that was just kind of willing to do it. They didn't know what they're doing, but there wasn't, you know, they didn't feel like it was a lot of risk there. So, you know, they just kind of do it to the best of their ability. And now with peer review, Department of Labor work paper review, they're really kind of buckling down on CPA firms and their ERISA practices, ERISA audit practices. So, you know, you can still find competitive fees out there, but, you know, you definitely, if you find one of those really low ball fees out there, do some digging to see how it's possible for them to perform an audit with that budget. So yeah, I mean, I think those are the main things to look at: the quantity of the audits, their commitment, their training, the team's commitment to it. So you may have a partner that's very committed to it, but is the rest of the team committed to it? Is it a small portion of that firm's revenue, and they kind of, you know, it gets treated, it gets the resources that a small portion of the revenue might get. So those are all questions a plan sponsor should ask. And so an advisor, I think, just kind of being aware of this issue I think has the opportunity to bring in the value. And I kind of, you know, you kind of alluded to, you know, how the thought out there that some people have. And I know after our discussions we've had, you and I, that, yeah, it's not, you know, your thought. But, you know, that the audit is seen as a commodity, that it's, you know, it's just got to get it done. They're all the same. So, you know, I want it done cheap. And there's no way an audit, any kind of service, can be a commodity. I'm working on a piece right now that plan auditing is not a commodity. And there's clearly the study shows that based off the number of plan audits, you're going to get a completely different quality experience. You'll see the fees are kind of run the, you know, board. I mean, you know, I think you'll see fees anywhere from $6,000-$7,000 on the low end to $20,000 to even $30,000, depending on the firm and size of the firm and, you know, if the team's efficient or not. So, you know, I think there's a lot of different ways to approach this that a advisor can bring value to a plan sponsor. They can save them money. I mean, clearly there's I think a lot of firms that are still, if they are doing quality work and they only do 5 to 10, I mean, they have to be charging quite a bit more, because, you know, if you haven't found those efficiencies and you don't have a team that's, you know, well-trained and experienced in this, it's going to take them longer, and hours times bill rate inevitably means a higher fee. So there's some value there as well.
Well, John, I think, you know, I think getting into this, you know, I called, you know, in the text part, I called it to begin the process of peeling back the layers on 401k plan audits. And as simple as these things may seem, they involve a lot of different entities. A retirement plan, as I've been, you know, known to say, isn't like dental insurance. You get dental insurance, you get a 2-year rate guarantee, and at the end of 2 years, if nobody likes it, you can change the carrier. You can change the deductible. You can change the coverage amounts. You can, you know, shop for premium. And if nobody wants it, at the end of 2 years, you just cancel it. Retirement plans in general aren't like dental insurance. You can't start one up on Tuesday and end one 2 years later and just walk away from it. And all along the way, there are very complex rules and loads of regulation and legislation that goes into making sure these plans are run the right way. So when you're talking about a competent ERISA attorney, when you're talking about a competent 338 investment manager, when you're talking about a competent 401k audit firm, they really shouldn't be a commodity, but I think that there's a disconnect between the complexity that goes into these different facets as opposed to the cost that the plan sponsor feels they're being forced to pay. And I think what, you know, you've shown, you know, quite clearly in the last 24 minutes that I've had you on the phone is that if you're having a plan done for your audit, there are questions you should be asking. ERISA is all about reasonableness, and those are all about facts and circumstances. So if you're going about this for the right way, if the plan is paying for it, which means the participants are paying for it, you do have an obligation to make sure, even just from the cost standpoint, that you're getting what you're paying for and the firm doing it is competent. I think that's one of the things the advisors need to point out, and it goes in lockstep with what they do with the other parts of the plan, whether it's a 338 or the third-party administrator or the record keeper or the 316 provider. You're just another one of those professional firms that needs to handle an arduous task inside of the plan. So I'll be very interested to read that piece on whether or not this or anything inside of this industry should be a commodity. But before I let you go, I want to thank you for your time. I've kept you longer than I said I would, which, you know, we knew that was going to happen. But before I let you go, please give out again the website, you know, LinkedIn, and an email address or a phone number. So if people want to get a hold of you, they have the opportunity to do that once we're done with this recording.
Okay, great. Thanks, Chuck. You can reach our website is pensioninsurance.com. We have some information there. You can reach me at jrusson, R-U-S-S-O-N, at pensioninsurance.com. You can call me at 805-277-7641. And you can track me down on LinkedIn as well. And thank you, Chuck. I really appreciate this opportunity. And I feel like there is something here. You know, I feel I've talked to enough advisors that, you know, have asked me questions and have felt like, hey, you know what, this is something I didn't really think about or our clients aren't thinking about. Very happy to share this and, you know, happy to take any phone call or email with specific questions about, 401k plan audits. We're happy to be a resource to anybody that has any questions.
That's what I like to hear. John, thank you very much. Can't wait to having you back on today. I'm glad I won the temperature contest in February. And we're going to have you back on in about a month so we can get into sort of the next layer of 401k audits. So, John, thank you very much for being on today, and have a great weekend.
All right, you too, Chuck. Thank you. Bye.